You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
Hello and welcome to episode 73 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello, hello.
And by Jay.
Good evening.
We're recording on Valentine's Day, in fact.
Yeah, it's a very romantic Valentine's Day, isn't it?
Romantic podcast evening, because due to Nurgle, slightly delayed this week, but we wanted to make sure we got a podcast out for you guys. And what a podcast it's going to be, because we're going to be talking about The Wrath of the Everchosen.
It's such a good book!
This is the first supplement we've had for Age of Sigmar 2.0, isn't it?
It is,
there's Forbidden Power and...
Yeah, this is the first kind of just source book, though, I suppose, without endless spells and the like.
Yeah, source book, that's the right term.
It's got a lot of, like, gaming content in it, though. Like, if you're a Chaos player, it's almost like 10 battle tomes in one.
It is, yeah, and we'll be talking about that in our main feature today.
We shall. We are also going to be discussing our top three events that we have taken part in.
Attended.
And we'll be reading out yours towards the end of the podcast, all the community picks. We also have quite a bumper news segment, because it wouldn't be the news if it wasn't a bumper news segment. Because that's Games Workshop nowadays.
It is, yeah. It's, a quiet week's got, what, three boxed games and a new army at the minute?
Yeah. So we're going to be digesting all of the latest news in just a few short moments, probably, actually. But before we get to the new segment, shall we discuss what we've been doing in the hobby for the past 7 days? Matt, would you like to start us off?
So I've not painted much this week, but I've built a load of stuff.
Yeah.
So I built the Aether War Zinch stuff. I love Skyfires and the awesome Magistra on the disc. And I wanted to do a Zinch list that wasn't, you know, change host.
Yeah.
So, built around Screamers and discs and all that fun stuff. So I think the slowest thing in my army is movement 16. So keep up with the Sky Dwarfs.
What's that,
anyway.
Four times faster than your average dwarf.
Yeah.
Yeah, even faster than a dwarf in an airship as well.
Yeah, and then while reading Wrath of the Everchosen, I also built Bellicor as well, so I can do a mixed demon force for Sigmar.
That'd be really cool.
Perhaps not as competitive, but it looks really cool. Mm-hmm. And there's some cool abilities. I also built the Worm Spats and got them kind of Zethanol sprayed, ready for some paint to go on those. I built two Mortifiers for my Sisters of Battle. They weren't the greatest models to put together, if I'm being totally honest.
They look tricky.
Didn't enjoy them as much as, say, the plastic sister box.
Yeah.
But they look really cool when they're done. They're just a bit fiddly, I think.
They look fiddly. But I think the end result is...
they're really dynamic, but yeah, they've got some quite spindly parts. So I've got another two of them to build, and the Exorcist. And then, yeah, I need to get cracking on, because it's mid-March, is it? The Purple Sparklies?
It is indeed, yes.
So yeah, get those done. I built some Goblin secret weapons to round up my Goblin Blood Bowl team, because we were playing Blood Bowl at the Purple Sparkly Unicorns Club Night. Well, I was anyway.
Well, you were.
We started a bit of a league. And to round off the week, last night I sprayed up 32 sisters in
32
like
sisters.
About half an hour. Sprayed the silver, sprayed the red. I need to go back in and do the kind of highlights on the red, so I'm going to put a lighter red on them.
Very cool.
Then go back in with a brush and touch up the silver. And then, yeah, paint the rest of it traditionally. Mm. So I'm hoping to get them done by Wednesday at the latest. I can probably get them done before then, but I'm on a strict schedule to get these done by the Unicorns.
Excellent. How did your game of Blood Bowl go?
It was awesome. It was a 1-1 draw, which is a good result for Goblins. and they, I think they killed four people and injured a load.
Yeah.
My bomber had Hail Mary Pass. So he can just pick any point on the board and on the 2+, the bomb lands there. But it always scatters three spaces in a random direction. Which, for a bomb, is not bad, because it has like a blast area, so you just throw it roughly in the direction of the enemy team and hopefully kill a load of players.
You're probably better throwing it next to the enemy, because I read you can catch them and throw them back.
Yes, you can, yeah.
So you don't want it to land on a square with
And Chainsaw was as awesome as ever. Unfortunately, my bomber accidentally killed my Fnatic. That was a shame.
That sounds like a very goblin thing to do.
It is, yeah.
Accidentally. Are you sure it was accidentally?
He was looking at it in the wrong way. But yeah, it's been a good week for building stuff. Next week it's going to be working on sisters and getting them all painted.
Excellent. Jay, what have you been doing in the hobby this week?
Painting Blood Bowl and Underworlds. So I've been painting my Pro Elves Elven Union Blood Bowl team. I've also been putting some paint onto my Wood Elf Blood Bowl team as well, because I'm feeling Blood Bowl-y.
And Elfie.
Oh, well, I'm just excited about the Lumineth Realm Lords, really. And anything Elfie that I can do, I'll do. I've even got the itch to start painting Wood Elves, like proper Wood Elves again, but there's no point. I thought,
what about Kurnothi Blood Bowl team? I mean, that's an expensive conversion, but, you know, using the Underworld teams, yeah.
I don't think painting Wood Elves would be a pointless task for you, because you quite like the Living City.
Yeah.
And fancy...
Yeah, but there's not many Wood Elves left in the Living City.
That's true,
You've got, you know, your traditional Glade Riders and Glade Guard, they've all disappeared now.
Well, you say this, but you could just convert. You've got a lot of profiles in that book.
Yeah, well, I was thinking you could use, like, the Shadow Warriors. They would make good Glade Guard, counts as, because they've got similar rules where they pop up in cover, get extra shots with the bows in cover and things like that.
What about some kind of giant stag beetle, like a smaller version of a Lari Elves, that fires some kind of spines out of its carapace as a steam tank?
Possibly, yeah.
Cool.
I'm just focusing on the Lumineth. I'm going to get some scenery painted up and some terrain built. Lumineth Realm Lords is where it's going to be.
Ace.
So yeah, so that's what I'm doing. And other than that, I've just been writing some content for the Sprues and Brews website.
You've been incredibly busy this week.
Yeah,
well you both have, to be honest.
There's a few articles up there on the Lumineth Realm Lords, so if anyone's interested in those, I'd check them out. There'll be more going up, because whilst I can't build any Lumineth Realm Lords, I can't paint any Lumineth Realm Lords, I'll just write about Lumineth Realm Lords.
Yeah, so yeah, if you are into that stuff, head over to the website. Jay's been cracking out content at an astonishing rate.
Yeah, definitely. This week for me, I have completely 100% built everything from the Aether War box for Caradrons now, including, thanks to Matt, obviously undercoated, we discussed last week, undercoated what was left of my Caradron force. They're now all on bases and things, ready for painting. I have finally finished a Caradron unit. I finished my frigate.
Oh, nice.
So the force is slowly getting there. I'm hoping the Ironclad will be done this weekend. Just got the Aether engine to finish, which I did a little bit on before we started recording the podcast. So we're looking forward. It's just a long stage, this bit.
I'm really looking forward to playing against this army.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool. I've treated myself, because I'm also part of this Blood Bowl league that Jay and Matt have discussed, I've treated myself to the Ogres, which I need to build this weekend.
The Fire Mountain Gutbusters.
Because my first game with them is on Monday night, so they need to be done before then. And an army list printed. Not army list, what am I about? Team roster printed by Monday evening.
It's fine. You've got the weekend. You can nail that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So I'm looking forward to building those. What else have we been doing in the hobby? We've been playing quite a bit of Underworlds.
We have. I've really kind of got back into Underworlds. With the new edition coming out, we'd played Night Vault quite a bit, hadn't we?
Yeah.
But we'd not touched it for a bit.
I really need to pick up Beastgrave, because I think my decks are struggling a little bit because I don't have any Beastgrave cards. But we had two games last week, Matt.
We did, they were fun.
You absolutely battered me in the first game. The second game, though, was a draw. So that
it was. And that was down to like some objectives at the end. It was nice and close.
Yeah. Whilst Matt was playing Blood Bowl at the club night, me and Jay had two games with Ryan.
Yep.
Which were really cool, although you battered us both times. And you used two different warbands as well.
Well, I used my Ripper Snarlfang warband, and that's a deck I've been playing with to try and, I've made that deck myself. So that did quite well in the first game. And then in the second game, I thought, I'd just take the... Because the Beastgrave stuff's pretty good, because all the recent warbands, they come with a sealed deck inside the box.
Yeah.
So you can pick up the warband and just play it straight away without having to worry about...
That's my favourite change with this edition of the game. It makes it so much easier to just go... Like last week, we were having a game, and I used my Flesh Eaters that I'd bought that day. And again, just use the sealed pack.
Yeah. So I used them. That was with the Knoffy warband, and they're actually really, really fun to use with just a sealed deck. So I'm very tempted to go back to the Knoffy and have a look at those as well.
Yeah, they were really cool.
Yeah.
I will just give a shout out to Craig as well, a regular listener to the podcast who I've been talking to this week, who apparently I've inspired him to collect carriage on overlords.
There you go, Dave.
And he's hoping to get an army ready to come down from Scotland to take part in the Unicorn 2 Day September?
Yeah.
No, one day I think he's coming to, sorry.
Okay. It's a long old drive.
It is a bit of a trek.
It's not so bad if you come by airship, though.
Airship, yeah, come by Ironclad.
Nice.
So hopefully we'll get to play Craig on the day.
Awesome. I had a lapse in insanity as well earlier in the week.
Did you?
Where I may have bought a golden ticket to Warhammer
Fest. Of course, yes. They've sold out now.
They have, yeah. So I had been umming and ahhing about it, and I mentioned it to you guys, and you were like, I might get a standard ticket for one day. Yeah. But yeah, I thought, for all the cool stuff, and, you know, it's the big Warhammer event of the year, I thought, you know what, sod it, let's do this.
Yeah, well, you get two exclusive miniatures, one for AOS, one for 40k, so that's cool.
Yeah.
And obviously you get front row seats for all the Q&As and...
And yeah. All the shows on the main stage as well.
And whilst me and Jay are sat in the queue, well, stood in the queue, waiting to go in, you can just, like, do the royal wave as you pass
it. Yeah, make me a luxurious throne at the front.
Straight on palanquin.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we've been quite busy in the hobby this week, then. That is the result of that conversation. So we're going to take a slight pause, and we will come back with our first major segment of this week's podcast. That is the latest news. It is time for this week's news. What have we got this week, Matt?
Well, as ever, we've got a load of news and a load of pre-orders coming up on Saturday. Mm. Yeah, tomorrow, in fact. So, the first kind of awesome release that we've got are pretty much all the outstanding Battle Box characters, apart from the two newest ones.
This is massive. This is the biggest news of the week, I think.
Yeah, well, people have been crying out for these. Some of them are quite old.
Some of them you can't get. Like, was it Looncurse for the...
Looncurse was in stock for, what, 2 days? Yeah. So you've got the Warlock Bombardier, the Aberrant Archregent, the Tyrant, the Arch Revenant, the Loom Boss on Giant Squig, and Vuk Mortion.
Mm.
They range from between €22.50 and €30, depending on the size of the model, with the Giant Squig being the most expensive one. I don't know what they translate to in pounds. I'm guessing between, you know, £17 and £25, maybe, depending
standard
on the size of the kit.
Standard single character.
And yeah, I mean, some of these models have been going for silly money on eBay as well.
Yeah, especially the Arch Regent. I remember when I dabbled with Flesh Eater Courts, I had a look for one of them. Yeah, they were way too expensive. And the Warlock Bombardier as well. He wasn't so bad, but he was still pricey.
But a lot of these are the kind of models that you need in your army as well, because they've got some really kind of optimal choices for the units, haven't they?
Yeah, and also, if you take the Warlock Bombardier, for example, he's your only plastic Warlock that you can buy. Well, you can now buy. All the other ones are fine cast or metal, so...
Yeah.
Fine cast.
Yeah.
So it's good to see these. I guess that means it might be a few, kind of, by a year maybe, till the next wave. Hopefully we'll see them more regularly, though.
Well, we're left with the Magister and the Endrin Master and Dirigible Suit. Obviously, they were very recent, so they're not part of this wave of special characters.
And
that
I imagine we'll
sense.
See more Battle Boxes
this year.
So, yeah, so all really good. So that's kind of the Age of Sigmar releases. We've got a load of Warcry stuff as well, though. We have got Warcry faction cards for the Sacrosanct Chamber, the Seraphon, the Sylvaneth, two Nurgle bands, a Slaanesh band, and two Khorne war bands.
Mm.
So a nice mixture of stuff for your older, you know, Age of Sigmar armies.
Yeah.
I was looking as well. The Seraphon, that looks like a really cool warband. You can take the Ripidactyls and Pterodons.
Yeah.
You've got the most amount of choices in Warcry, I think, with the Seraphon.
Skinks, Saurus Warriors, Temple Guard, Ripidactyls, Pterodons.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Skink Priest is in there or not. I can't.
No, I don't think he is.
I think we said last week, the last wave of cards came out. They're really opening it up for everybody to use their Age of Sigmar armies. Because I think that was one of maybe the things that wasn't as popular, but was very Chaos-focused.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, so that's exciting. We also have the Formeroid Crusher and the Spheranx coming out.
Yeah.
Which are really cool models.
They are very cool.
I'm probably going to get both of these just to use as monsters, because we've been saying a lot, we haven't got many monsters we can use for Realm of Bat-Air Beasts.
Well, I've only got one, and I need to paint it, and that's my zombie dragon.
Yeah, and I've got a Chimera, I think, but it'd be good to have some more monsters, especially, as we'll see in a bit, in Wrath of the Everchosen, yeah. There's some rules for wild monsters as well, which is pretty cool.
Very cool.
So, yeah, they are €32.50 each, which, I don't know, 27 quid, something like that.
They're fairly sizable, aren't they?
So. Yeah, so they look pretty cool. For Middle-earth, we've got a load of returning models, the highlight being Boromir with the Banner of Gondor.
Really nice model. Boromir of the White Tower to give him his full title for that blister.
We've also got the Heroes of Erebor in all their armour and stuff from...
The Hobbit.
Probably the third Hobbit film that one's based on, isn't it?
Isn't it? I thought they were the models, Joe, from in the first Hobbit film where Thor and Oakeshield's fighting Azog for the first time outside Moria.
No, I think it's the Heroes of Erebor where they sally forth out of
to meet the wood elves and the orcs. Okay, yeah.
So yes, really nice models. Don't know how much they are. I don't think they're the cheapest models when they came out the first time because I think they were all resin, but at least they're available again. We've also got Bard with his wind blance.
Yeah.
Which is a really cool model.
Yeah.
So yeah, I believe I read somewhere. I couldn't find it when I was writing this post, but I'm sure I read there was another wave of Lord of the Rings cards as well.
There is. Right at the end of that article, there's a little sentence that says it'll be another chance to pre-order some cards.
Okay, awesome. Unless that's been removed from the article when I was rewriting this post. But yeah, so if it isn't, then I'm sure it'll be soon.
Yeah, it will be.
So for Blackstone Fortress, we've got a new expansion. This is a strange one.
Feels like a bit of a filler.
Well, it's No Respite, it's called.
Hmm.
A lot of people have commented on Facebook that this really could have been a White Dwarf article. It introduces the Plague Marines and the Pox Walkers to Blackstone Fortress with some Nurgle mechanics, which seem quite interesting.
Yeah.
Which is cool. You get 3 plastic push-fit Plague Marines and 6 plastic push-fit Pox Walkers, the ones that everybody's got loads of. Now, what stings a little bit on this one is that it's €50.
Really?
Yeah.
That seems very steep.
Yeah. It's up there with the price of the boxed expansions for Blackstone. Considering these push-fit models, everybody's got hundreds of.
Yeah.
Stings a little bit on that one.
Yeah. I mean, Blackstone, if you love Blackstone Fortress, then... Yeah, you'll probably still pick it up.
If we face it, this is going to be the same price point as the Zote, and people will buy the Zote just to paint up. People aren't going to buy this box to get some old 8th edition starter set models.
Yeah, unless you've got a real hardcore group of Blackstone Fortress.
Maybe, and you know, I do like Blackstone, it's fun. I just think they could have had that a little bit cheaper, maybe.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a shame. The big release of the week, which is surprising since we've already got loads of stuff coming, is a massive wave of Necromunda stuff.
Mm.
So we have got some new Goliath models. The Stimmers and the Forgeborn, which I think we only talked about the other week.
Yeah.
They were revealed at the LVO.
LVO, yeah.
And this is a box of 6 plastic models that make said Stimmers and Forgeborn. The Forgeborn being essentially Juves, but they're a different profile. So these are basically young initiates trying to prove themselves to the rest of the gang and have some different weaponry to represent that. And then we've got the Stimmers, who are off their face on growth hormones and have strapped some weapons to their arms, and they look really cool.
They saw Space Marine Centurions and thought, I can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We've also got Goliath cards, new ones, with some new cards and stuff in there, which is cool. What's really, really cool, though, is House of Chains. Now, this is a brand new expansion, which initially we thought, oh, okay, this is the Goliath Codex, essentially.
Yeah.
But it's more than that. So we do have all the new profiles for the Goliath and all the new rules, but it looks like each book's going to be based on a different aspect. So House of Chains, yeah, you've got the Goliaths working in the forges and stuff, but then Chains also alludes to slaves and stuff.
Mm.
So we get some new factions, such as the Slave Guild. These are the guys who go around enslaving all the dregs of the Underhive, led by a Chain Lord. We've got the Shackle Man, who's got like a big thing to capture slaves with, and Pit Fighters. These have all got awesome new models. We also have some of the slaves who have escaped. Now, Ogryns, if they escape and rise up to fight their oppressors, I imagine it'd be quite a formidable force.
Mm.
So we are getting a new gang based around escaped Ogryn slaves with awesome new plastic kits.
They look amazing.
I can't believe these are plastic.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, Ogryns, you know, they they're a bit absent-minded. They might lose the weapons and leave them lying around. So what they generally do is just hack off a limb and replace it with a big pneumatic power fist.
Yeah.
Because why not?
I love the one with like the almost a power pack on his back. Yeah, yeah. And he's got like two welding things on his arm.
Yeah, rivet guns. Oh. These guns. So you're not going to have many in your gang, but you're going to have massive, brutish, you know, ogres with power fists and rivet guns.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong there.
Yeah, I think these look amazing.
There'll be options for taking these as slave ogrins and servitor ogrins as well in your other factions. They've come out of nowhere. It's just like Warhammer community were like, hey, look, here's a new gang.
Yeah. Yeah, literally like out of nowhere. Tell you what I did dig out the other day. All my original Goliath stuff.
Nah, are you thinking
so
of
I've got all my cards Goliath and all my dice and everything for them.
You built them as well, didn't you?
I didn't finish building them. I've still got some to build.
And I think you need to get on that, Dave.
Yeah. Well, we want to play some Necromunda, so I'll get them finished.
Well, I'm going to pick up a House of Chains. It's the first in a series of four books coming out this year. And I think the fact that... I think people were worried that, okay, we've got Gangs of the Underhive and now we need to buy a book for each one of our factions if we want to play them. Where actually it's more of a source book and the list is a small part of that book.
Mm-hmm.
So I think each of these books is going to have another aspect of the Underhive. And
Looking
at the titles, there's some factions that we might see hidden in there. So we've got the next one coming out is House of Blades, which features the Escher. But that could well feature some like Assassin Guild or something if it's Blade related.
Yeah.
We then got House of Iron, which features the Orlocks. And people have mentioned, could this also feature the kind of, I can't remember the code now, but the gangs that travel in vehicles from hive to hive, kind of Mad Max style.
Oh, right.
That'd be really cool. And then there's House of Artifice, which features the Vansar. But if you think high tech, you could also get the Spires in here with their cool winged backpacks.
Yeah.
So, that, well, obviously we don't know that yet, but that's my ideas for the kind of like secondary army that's going to be in each of these books.
Yeah.
It is priced at, I don't think I wrote down the price for this one, €37, which isn't too bad. I think that's, what, 20-odd quid, 30 quid maybe? So, yeah, if it had just been purely Goliath, then maybe pushing it a bit, but the fact that it's got lots of other content for your games, I think these will be a good read.
And did they say it's per quarter? So a book a quarter?
Well, they said four over the year, so I'd infer every quarter. I think they said it's 160-odd pages as well, so a big old book.
A big old book, yeah.
Yeah, so it'll be really cool. I know some people have been disappointed we haven't got some of the older gangs kind of returning, but we could well see them inside here as well.
Yeah, they could be folded in.
Which is cool. From Forge World, we have had some awesome new Dark Angel models. The Inner Circle Knights Cenobium, or Kenobium. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. Maybe no, Kenobium, like Obi-Wan. they are £63 for five, but they look quite big. They're like Centurion size.
They look fantastic. I love the swords. I love the armour.
Now, you could very easily count these as 40k Terminators.
Yeah, Deathwing.
Yeah.
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 They're very nice. Very, very nice.
This thought did cross my mind. they look amazing. Yeah.
I think that's most of the stuff that we've seen from Forge World. So over the next few weeks, we should start seeing some like new stuff as well.
Well, I mean, the Lions can't be too far behind.
No. And the Khan.
Jakati Khan, the Lion, yeah. That's it, isn't it? They're only two
really,
left.
Yeah. So yeah,
and the Emperor and the Sage Light.
Well, we're gearing up to the Siege of Terror, aren't we now? Mm. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I imagine there'll probably be a power armor unit for the Dark Angels as well. Maybe they tend to do a couple, don't they?
Have we seen as well the?
In fact, there is. We saw them at the open day.
Yeah, I thought we plasma did, weapons, some sort of plasma weapon, didn't they? But isn't there as well? Have we not seen yet a character model for the Dark Angels? So I know we've had the Praetor, but we haven't had like a first captain
like a character.
Yeah, there's been one mentioned in passing, I think, who leads the new wing, and I can't remember, but it's the plasmary wing of the Dark Angels.
Yeah.
So he'll probably be some cool,
like the Raldoran and the Sigismund equivalent.
So yeah, so that's really cool. We had a bit of a post from Warhammer community talking about Psychic Awakening, and in that they officially revealed the worst kept secret in the world, that Saga of the Beast features orcs and space wolves. Kind of got that
with the name.
So this is in March, and they've shown the Gazgul teaser already. So we don't know who the or if there is a Space Wolf character in this. There might not be.
Maybe they'll do like they've done with the Imperial Fists, the Dark Angels, and release a new named captain or
I can see, I mean, what I would like to see is a new Ragnar Blackmane with some wolves.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Primaris Ragnar Blackmane.
But bear in mind, all that we got for the Tau Gene Stealer Cult / Imperial Guard book is Shadow Sun.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely see a Primaris.
I think with Gene Stealer Cult players, though, they got the Kellamorph individually and they got a Star Collecting box. So they didn't get anything brand new, but they're still a very new army. So, but that Shadow Sun model is amazing anyway.
I do wonder if we'll see some new plastic orcs, because like we said a few weeks ago, there's not much left. They haven't got really just
commandos
and tank busters. And
Defcopters. All you have to do is Defcopters. Get those sprued from that box of whatever it was called and release that.
So I think all those possibilities, and obviously Gazgul, which is going to be a massive kit, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, you'd think Gazgul is some, but there are the plastic Meganobs are recent, aren't they? There won't be any more Meganobs. Do you know what I think is quite interesting, though, is once Saga of the Beast has come out in March, we're in new territory again, then, are we?
So we've got Engine War,
which is Admech
and Demons.
So that just leaves the Necrons,
and the Custodians,
and Harlequins.
Yeah, I think that's it.
With a book left, okay.
While we're on this subject, actually, has anybody noted? Maybe I should have mentioned this before, but we started talking podcasts just to make myself look like a fool. But have we noticed that on the Black Library celebration stuff, where we've got the two new characters on the box, it does say Talons of the Emperor?
Well, they are part of the Talons of the Emperor.
They are, but we think that could be another hint towards folding them into one book?
There is no gaming army called the Talons of the Emperor.
Is the Talons of the Emperor keyword on them?
No.
Not interesting, yet. Okay. Yeah, this would be a really good thing. I think it makes sense, like we said last week, it would make sense to fold them in.
I thought I'd mention that out loud anyway.
That would be good.
We have seen rumours of a shipping document that did say Custodes.
Custodes 2, wasn't it, or something like that? Yeah. It's like a Mark 2 version of the book with sisters folded in and all the folded stuff in.
I think it's going to be more likely, like what they did with the Chaos Space Marines of version 2 with a few new profiles.
Yeah.
Cool. And then final bit of news from the Warhammer Storyforge animated series. There's going to be an animated 40k anthology series. It currently doesn't have a name.
Nope.
They're keeping it super secret. But it will have all sorts of 40k stuff going on. And the first episode is written by Andy Smiley.
Yeah.
Who has done lots of Flesh Terror stories. And I think he's heading up Warhammer Storyforge as well.
Yeah.
Are they looking for voice actors as well?
They've got them all. Yeah. They've hired them.
Is that your chance at the limelight there?
Yeah. I'm excited for Angels of Death. I think that's going to be really cool. But when I saw the artwork and the teaser image for this... Oh, this is going to be...
Have you watched the teaser that they did from the last event yet?
Yeah.
They're really cool. I love the animatrix. Imagine that crossed with Warhammer 40,000.
Yeah, it does look really cool. But this is the kind of art style, the kind of almost touching on Japanese animation. Oh, man, I can't wait for this.
Yeah.
And the fact that also that there's inquisitorial agents in there as well.
Well, we did have I do wonder if some of these new designs of agents maybe hint at new models at some point.
Well, people are going to watch this, get into it, want to build armies inspired by it. There's no models that look like that. Oh, here you go.
Well, they could easily release, a kill team based on those characters.
I'm sorry, what was that? Codex Imperial Agents? Yeah, I think that should land at exactly the same time.
Yeah, they also said that there are going to be previews at Adepticon and Warhammer Fest.
Is this where your golden ticket comes in handy? Because you'll get your own advanced screening of it now.
Yeah. So we did speculate on our Adepticon post that we'll probably see at least a bit of the first episode or something at Adepticon, and then the same again at Warhammer Fest.
Yeah.
So it is an exciting time to be a Warhammer fan.
And also, just going back to your Middle Earth part,
ooh,
it has gone from the post, profile cards. So,
I think they're staggering it a little bit. There's a lot of everything coming out every week, and there's been super high demand. So I think it's just been a case of ordering enough stock.
Yeah, cool. Lots of news. I think there's something for a little bit of almost everybody news segment. Some really really cool stuff. Some stuff I'm really looking forward to. What I'm also looking forward to is our next segment, where Matt will be opening the source book for Wrath of the Everchosen. And so we travel to the Varenspire and check out the conflict between the Ossiarch Bone Reapers and the ever chosen, the well, just chaos.
Chaos.
Just chaos. So, Matt, do you want to talk us through the highlights of the book?
So, yeah, so this is an unusual book, really. So, like we said earlier, it isn't a battle tome. It's more of a narrative supplement, really. It's kind of, last week we looked at the match play guide for Middle-earth.
Yeah.
This is kind of the polar opposite of it, where it's very narrative and lore focused.
Yeah, which is normally the roles reversed, isn't it? Middle-earth's the narrative.
Yeah.
You like your competitive match
play. Well, I think it's just a sign of Games Workshop kind of holding the three ways to play for all systems, you know, true, which is good to see. The full first half of this book is all brand new lore, telling the story of the siege of the Eight Points. So I'm not going to go into too many spoilers. I know some people haven't read the book yet, and I would encourage you to pick this up, even if you're not playing the factions that are in the book, because there's some really cool content in here.
If you're a fan of the Luminefs, it's worth picking up as well.
Yeah, so the kind of the Cliff Notes version is the Eight Points, has been multiple times mentioned during the kind of narrative so far, is an awesome strategic point. There are realm gates to all the realms, and it's a heavily defended fortification since Archeon moved in and made sure this place was locked down. During the Realm Gate Wars, I believe two of the Realm Gates were destroyed to the Realm of Life and, I want to say, the Realm of Fire. As part of that campaign where all the various cities were built for Sigmar in that narrative conflict.
So you say the realm gates were destroyed. So
two of the realm gates in the Eight Points were destroyed.
So is there eight realm gates? Is there?
Yeah.
All right. So to get to like Realm of Life, Arcane has to go through one of the other realms.
Yeah.
Then, right. Okay. Cool.
So I think basically it's Sigmar strongholds. It's harder to get to now.
Yeah. Okay.
After what happened. The only one he hasn't got direct access to is Azir as well.
Yeah.
Because you know it'd probably be knocking on Sigmar's door pretty soon after. Nagash is on a quest to destroy all life in the realms. And chaos, by essence, is emotions made manifest, which is a byproduct of life. So Nagash feels that he needs to stamp out chaos because it's the polar opposite to him. Equally, the Eight Points, if he could take this strategic location, he could besiege the entire Mortal Realms with an endless stream of undead, which is a pretty scary thing to face for the realms. So, in the previous book, which the name escapes me now, the
one with the vaults in it.
Yeah.
Forbidden Power.
Forbidden Power. Nagash was trying to regain his greatest general, who we know now is Katakross. Having restored him to his full power, he's using him to lead the campaign against Archeon and his forces because he knew he'd need a formidable general. Hidden away, Nagash, for pretty much all of the time of the realms, he's had this army of Ossiot Bone Reapers just in a dormant state, ready to go.
A bit like the Call and his Primaris Marines.
Yeah, they've been locked away, and now he has used them as his kind of trump card to take things because they're pretty good Bone Reapers, aren't they?
Yeah.
Petrifax Elite, yeah.
2+3 saves.
Throw them into the Varan Spire. So he's starting his campaign, and the story tells how Katakross is sending his forces there and the various battles that happen within the kind of the sub-realm of the Eight Points. And yeah, all the kind of the strategic battles. We also see a little bit of what Archeon's been up to in the kind of preceding years as well. Because we haven't really seen much of Archeon recently. I think he's mentioned briefly in the Deepkin book,
right,
where he's looking for Slaanesh. And this carries on from this thread. Now, the death of Karanak, the Hound of Vengeance, at the hand of Slaaneshi forces, sends Khorne into an almighty rage that momentarily kind of causes a ripple in the, I want to say, space-time continuum. But essentially, because his hatred of Slaanesh is so strong at that point, it gives the Gaunt Summoners, who are working tirelessly to help Archeon in his quest, a location. And that is in a sub-realm between Haish and Ulgu. So wasting no time, silver towers, all sorts of stuff goes to this sub-realm, pierces the magical shroud, and Archeon leads the head of this force to take whatever's defending it, which handily is some Lumineth. They mention briefly some spear elves and some war machines, which is new.
Yep.
He deals with them, and there's a nice bit where he's chatting with Slaanesh. He's not a fan of Slaanesh. He doesn't like any of the Chaos Gods, but he knows that to win the ultimate war, he needs to release Slaanesh, so Slaanesh is, again, a threat to the race of the Mortal Realms.
What really I like about this bit is that the Chaos Gods are quite like, they're just sort of this vague concept, you know, the God of Corn and all the things it stands for, but you never actually, as a character, interact with a Chaos God.
Yeah, we've got Archeon talking to the Dark Prince himself, yeah, which
not,
is really cool.
Yeah, not a greater demon or an aspect of Slaanesh, actually
it is
Slaanesh.
Actually Slaanesh. And it's cool, he's described as being like kind of just like a hazy shadow with two lights where the eyes would be. And
yeah, yeah, really I think cool. That's really, really cool.
And yeah, he's bound by these chains that have been enchanted by Teclis and Tyrion. And each chain can only be broken a different way. Archeon tries to destroy them with the Slayer of Kings, and Slaanesh basically just laughs at him saying, you can't do that. And the one example he gives is there's a chain that can only be destroyed by the forces of Khorne. But obviously Khorne hates Slaanesh, who would never willingly help him. So Teclis has done this purposefully to make it harder for Slaanesh to escape. Archeon's like, Dorgar, just bite it with your Khorne head, and it shatters the chain. So
Archeon's overpowered.
He is overpowered, isn't he? So he's coming up with a way to try and release these chains. Unfortunately, while he's doing this, he has a premonition with the Eye of Sheeran that the Varan Spire's being invaded by Bone Reapers. And he's like, dash darn it, we're going to have to postpone this. Mm-hmm. Knowing well that Tyrion and Teclis are going to promptly move Slaanesh to a new location. But we're slowly getting to this release of Slaanesh thread, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Ooh. And obviously the elves are heavily involved with that, so I do wonder if we see that kind of branch of the story in the Lumineth book.
Yeah, I mean, I think we will, but I also don't think we'll see the completion of the story there, because Tyrion Teclis played a big part in the capturing and binding of Slaanesh, but so did Melarion,
yeah. Who
is the Malkeith, reborn Malkeith, the Lord of Shadows. And he's obviously worked with Tyrion and Teclis to do this. So I think this story arc will continue, Lumineth, and then whatever the Shadow Elves eventually are. So
it's, yeah, and it's whether even this one binding that's been released suddenly makes Slaanesh more of a threat, even in his dormant state.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting. The rest of the book's got some really, really cool bits as well, and there's an epic battle at the end of it, and I'm not going to give any spoilers because you need to read it for yourself.
You've told me what happens in this, Matt. Honestly, get yourself a copy of this book. It's like a little Black Library novel on itself.
It really is, and it's we saw the Realmgate War series back when Sigmar started, but I think the game's a lot more popular now,
yeah.
And the lore has advanced and progressed, and
yeah.
It is refreshing to see brand new lore like this, and I think it's done in a better way than the Psychic Awakening books have been done.
Yeah.
I'd have rather the Psychic Awakening books like this and have, you know, a thought-out narrative. Obviously, they've mapped out this story and we're seeing elements of it.
We're at two different stages, aren't we? Age of Sigmar, they're really building this real bedrock of lore, and it's really exciting for the future of AOS. I think Psychic Awakening, to me, feels like they're trying to quickly get to a stage where they can slam the door shut on 8th edition and bring in 9th.
Yeah, that's the difference. Psychic Awakening is trying to wrap up the loose ends before they get to whatever's happening in the next edition.
Yeah.
Where this is telling an ongoing story because we don't know where the end is. It's uncharted territory, which makes it more exciting.
Yeah. I mean, that there must be a lot more freedom when they're writing background for Age of Sigmar, whereas 40k... you're in that 41st millennium. You can't go past that 41st millennium. How much can they change without upsetting too many people?
Well, that's it. You know, you could have, you know, the Emperor return or whatever, or
yeah,
you know, Terra falls, but you're not going to do it within the confines of the game, where Sigmar is an entirely new universe.
Yeah.
Anyway, it goes. We could see a Zir force to chaos. You know, it's not going to destroy the game. You know, the status change, the status quo will have to change, and you know. I'd quite like to see that kind of thing.
I hope we eventually get to play games in Azir.
Well, there are rules that reflect it in the Cities of Sigmar.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I couldn't ever imagine Terra falling. Like, Cagey was destroyed, and that shocked me, but I can never see Terra falling. But in Age of Sigmar, you're right. as you hear, impenetrable currently.
We could see the Empire Strikes Back chapter where suddenly, you know, Sigmar's on his back foot, which would be really exciting to see.
And of course, you've got these realms opening up and stuff, so if Azir gets taken down, the remnants of Sigmar could attach itself to another realm and try and regrow itself or try to retake Azir. Yeah, anything could happen.
Yeah, the so it's really good. And it's just for the lore alone, I'd pick up this book. But that's not all we get, which is cool. So we get quite a comprehensive painting section, basically telling you how to paint demons. Because a big factor of this book are the multiple different sub-factions you can take from number of Chaos Wands.
Yep.
One being Chaos Undivided, essentially.
Looks like a mix of contrast and old-school.
It is indeed, yeah. Lots of contrast in here, which is good. And contrast is perfect for demons, because you've got lots of weird organic shapes.
Yeah.
And, basing schemes, all sorts of cool bits. We also get a bit of Ossiarch Bone Reaper love, because the Bone Reapers are featured in the narrative, which is really cool. The second half of the book goes into rules, and again, we've got some really, really good stuff here. So one of my favourite things about Age of Sigmar are the different realms. And we get realm rules for the 8 points, with the same Realmscape features chart, with 6 new different Realmscape features. We get a new realm spell, a new realm command trait, command ability. These are really cool.
Yeah.
And I'd probably, you know, I think we need to see some kind of chart compiling them all together.
Yeah, because they should be in the General's Handbook then, so they can be used.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, at the minute, I guess this is based on the narrative of this, but I would love to see, you know, a D20 chart with lots of different realms and sub-realms.
Like, yeah, like the one we were just talking about there, the realm between light and shadow.
Yeah.
In your honest opinion, I've not seen this chart, so I'm literally looking at it from the side angle. Do you think one of the reasons they've not done that, do you think that chart edges towards death or chaos, or could you imagine army of order?
No way more than some realms, you know, support other armies and some don't.
Yeah.
Now, this one, for example, Realmscape features no effect. The second one, subtract 1 for casting. Third one, units cannot fly, -1 to hit for missile weapons. They're variations of stuff that we've seen in the other realms. Essentially, these are just a way of throwing a spanner in the works, and it means that your super-tuned army could, in that realm, not be as effective as they could normally
be. Which happens, like you say, in all the realms as they are right now.
I think
that stupid one where you can't shoot after a over. What realm was that? Where you've got the real limitation on how far you can shoot.
Was it the realm of shadow?
Cast magic, something like that.
You always seem to roll that. I know some people don't like these, but I like the fact that it throws the spanner in the works and you've got to think on your feet.
Yeah, I like it.
And a realm spell, it's all good. I would like to see more of these, and yeah, I'd like to see a compilation of them. The other new thing in here is roaming monsters. Again, you're probably not going to see this in like a match play game. This is all very narrative based.
Mm-hmm.
For each artifact that you've got across both armies, you can put down a roaming monster who basically follows a random chart with different effects, and it will go after the closest unit.
Like how it works in Realm of Beasts.
Yeah, pretty much. So if you've got, say, 2 artifacts and I've got 1, there's a maximum of 3 monsters. So that is the controlling kind of element of how many go on there. And yeah, it's not going to be used in every game, but I think it's quite fun. You get a chart of the ones that you can use as well, because this is based on the 8 points. They're going to be all chaotic ones, so Chaos Gargants, Furies, Mindstealer Sphyranxes, which coincidentally is up for sale this week. Funny that. But yeah, I think it's a bit of fun.
Yeah.
I'd quite like to try this. Again, maybe not in a GT, but it's something a bit different. Similar to that, we've got Wandering Endless Spells that follow the same rules. Each battle round, they'll appear at a certain point on the battlefield and will do different things depending on a D6 roll, depending on how close they are to someone.
I like that because I bet there's loads of people. I mean, I've not really bought a lot of Endless Spells yet, but if you've got a nice collection of Endless Spells, you might not use some of them all the time, so it might be nice to use it in a battle plan like this.
Yeah, especially if it's effective. So, when we do our big narrative campaign.
Yeah.
And it's not a case of who gets the second turn gets to control them. It's just a random chart. So it could affect either army.
Yeah.
Again, you know, it's not, I suppose, designed to be in a super competitive tournament game, but for a bit of fun, like you say, a chance to use some of these endless spells that you've never used before.
Mm.
And again, it's limited by the number of artifacts. I think that's a good thing that they've put in there. So you can't just go completely mental. I mean, you could do if you wanted to, you know. Rules can be broken if you want to, but it gives you a nice, comfortable number. You're talking at no more than 2 or 3, really, in a normal battle, which is good. So that's kind of the kind of wackier stuff. What is kind of maybe going to be seen more in events are the siege rules. Now, I think it's worth mentioning it's a real shame they haven't re-released any kind of fortifications for this. Just seems like the one missed opportunity maybe for this book.
Yeah.
But it does stress that a stronghold will vary from army to army. Sylvaneth might just have a wood as their stronghold and have a dense area of wild woods or something. And that essentially is your fortress where ogres could have some rickety shacks and stuff.
Yeah.
But you'd still use the same kind of rules for sieges.
Mm-hmm.
Which essentially starts with the siege phase where there's a kind of rock, paper, scissors mechanic where you pick an action if you're the defender from gather supplies, rebuild and counter tunnels, while the attacker, Jay, you could choose to starve them out, batter their fortifications or tunnel down. And depending on what the two sides do, have different effects during the battle. So it could be that you weaken all their defences or that the enemy army takes a load of mortal wounds because they've been starved because you've besieged the city.
Mm.
Or your sneaky Skaven started digging underneath, so some of your units start in their deployment zone inside the castle. It's really, really fun. I think it'd be good for us to do some of these during our campaign.
Yep.
Again, just for something a bit different. You also get some new command abilities that are based around sieges, and every army in the game gets some abilities.
Ooh.
So pick an army, Jay.
Seraphon.
So if you're attacking and you're Seraphon, friendly units returned to the battlefield by the reinforcement attacker's command ability can be set up anywhere on the battlefield more than 9 inches away from the enemy instead of wholly within 6 inches of the battlefield. So in a normal game, reinforcements would come off from the edge, but because you're magical demon lizards, you just teleport next to the castle.
Just manifest which is cool. Anywhere.
Very cool.
Say if you were Caradron's, Dave, your armies can basically redeploy because you've got the speed of the sky vessels.
Mm.
So yeah, not, you know, massive changes.
They're quite
thematic stuff.
Thematic, yeah.
So I think that's a fun thing. You also get two battle plans that are built around sieges as well. And speaking of battle plans, you get a load of different types of battles. The kind of stuff that you'd see in battle tomes, more narrative maybe, and they all follow the events of battles during the storyline.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I think these will be really fun to play over the course of our campaign. One of them, The Fate of the 8 Points, is based on the Horus Heresy battle between Leman Russ and Magnus, where they start in combat at the start of the game and the rest of the war's going on around them. So that, you know, immediately you've got two characters duking it out in the battle.
Kartakras and Archaon in the middle.
Yeah. And the battle ends when one of those two die.
Oh, wow.
Can they retreat or are they stuck there?
They are fighting each other.
Ace.
So yeah, but they, because the fights are important, they get a 5+ ignore wound aura. So it is like two mighty warriors duking with each other. I mean, unless one gets stuck in the Slayer of Kings, maybe.
Yeah, well, short battle end, isn't it?
It's a short battle end. But yeah, so I think, and again, all these stuff, while it's based around what happens in the book, you can adapt these to your own armies, which is really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then the end part of the book has about 15 or 16 new allegiance abilities for Chaos, which is a load of abilities.
Mm.
Now, you get the Host of Chaos, which is a new allegiance built around mixed demons. You then also get some factions based around the four gods. Now, those ones stack on top of your allegiance abilities that you already get.
Oh, wow.
Which is really cool. So, if you're Khorne, you still get your blood tithe points. You just get some extra love on top of that.
Cool.
Which is really cool. You take them, essentially, instead of one of the stock builds. So, Slaanesh, rather than one of the three hosts, you'd have this host instead.
Right. Oh,
which
yeah.
Mixes
yeah.
things up a bit. So, you're not getting an extra ability just for the sake of it. You have to choose whether you want to take these ones or the old one. But you still get your innate faction abilities, which is really cool. So the big Chaos one, the Legion of Chaos Ascendant, is basically built around mixed demons. Demons as they were back in Warhammer Fantasy. Now, you miss out on your god-specific summoning ability, so instead of that, you can summon demons to the battlefield. In your hero phase, you pick a friendly Chaos Ascendant demon hero. You roll 3d6. If you roll 10 or more, you get to summon a unit of 10 Bloodletters, Plague Bearers, Demonettes, or Horrors, depending on your god keyword.
Okay.
So your Khorne heroes will summon Bloodletters, your Tzeentch heroes will summon Horrors. So you've got some control over what you summon by picking your heroes, but as your heroes start to die, your summoning potential goes down.
Wait, yeah.
There is a downside, however. If you roll a double on this 3d6, you take a mortal wound. If you roll a treble, you get d3 mortal wounds.
Okay.
So this seems pretty good. You know, you could get 50 demons over the course of the battle. Equally, you could kill your own characters. And it fits with the chaos fighting against itself kind of element.
This is the one where you can take... What I like about this one is taking all the different greater demons. So having, like, your Lord of Change fighting alongside a Bloodthirster, or the Keeper of Secrets with a Great Unclean One. That's really cool.
Well, what's even cooler than that, Dave? Now, obviously, you're missing out on your god-specific stuff. So to counter that, you get another ability as well. Every demon in the army has a 6+ ignore wound aura, which is pretty good. It's like disgusting and resilient, but not as good. If you've got disgusting and resilient, of course, it'll be on top of that.
Ooh.
So they're quite resilient demons.
Yeah.
The idea is that they are fighting in the heart of chaos, because that's really the only way you'd get all the various flavours of demons popping up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get some spells and command traits and artifacts, and it looks really cool. Maybe not the most powerful for, you know, a GT, but it certainly looks fun.
Yeah.
You then get some War Scroll Battalions for each of the gods. They are bananas, though. So, 2-3 Khorne Demon Heroes and 8 Bloodletter units. You're not going to fit those in most armies.
No.
But they get to reroll charges. 160 points, and you need a lot of models. I'm worried about the points of these, but I imagine most of these would be well over a normal 2,000-point match play battle. But again, the focus of this book is around the match play, so you can build your cool, awesome-themed armies.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone would be crazy enough to put together all these battalions together in one of these mixed armies. You'd be talking like 10,000 points or something crazy like that. But it looked really cool on the table.
Yeah.
So then we get the Knights of the Empty Throne. So while Archeon's out doing Archeon stuff, the Varangard are essentially guarding an empty throne. And this represents an army of just Varangard. So the Varangard become heroes, they can take the command traits, they can take artifacts of power. They're pretty cool. If a unit of Varangard is destroyed, on a 5+, a new unit of Varangard appear. Because, essentially, they're just sallying forth from the Varanspire.
So you can't take anything else?
I think Varangard units get the hero keyword. So your non-Varangard stuff doesn't get the benefit, but you'd be no point taking this army if you weren't Varangard. Understood. So, again, it's not the most... Varangard are cool, but Varangard and Archeon are probably less cool.
Yeah.
It'd be fun, you know, if you want to take Varangard with some artifacts. Yeah, it's a bit different. Again, for a narrative, it'd be really cool where you're trying to fight to the Varanspire and just endless swarms of Varangard are coming out. I know how much you love fighting Varangard, Dave.
Just the damage output of them is just crazy. But saying that, that's them with Archeon and the buffs that he gives, so...
This is it. So it's a different kind of list. Yeah. It's more waves of them rather than uber mega fighty ones. Yeah. So again, it's a bit different. Then we get onto the god specific ones. I'm not going to go over all of these because there's loads of them. I'm going to pick out my favourite ones. And again, these stack on top of the normal kind of god abilities.
Mm-hmm.
So my favourite Khorne one is the Baleful Lords. If you really like Bloodthirsters and want to take an army of 5 Bloodthirsters plus your required battle line, these are the guys to go for. Yeah, all friendly Bloodthirsters can run and charge in the same turn.
Nasty.
They have a command trait to add 1 to charge rolls for friendly Bloodthirsters within 8 inches, which is going to be 5 Bloodthirsters. They add 1 to save rolls with their artifact power. So yeah, these guys are pretty cool. You can sneak in 5 various Bloodthirsters, 3 battle line, cheapest option that you've got, Blood Reavers, maybe 70 points each, and I think you can just about squeeze in the battalion where all your Bloodthirsters get to like fight after each other.
Mm-hmm.
Would be a mental army. You can squeeze in every Bloodthirster, so Exalted Bloodthirster, Scarbrand, 1 of each normal Bloodthirster, 2 Blood Reavers and a unit of Flesh Hounds, I think, is 2,000 points. Mm. Again, seems a really fun army to use. All running and charging. I'm sure Jay would love to face that.
Yeah, sounds ace.
So yeah, I don't think, you know, you spend a lot of points on Bloodthirsters and Behemoths are cool. I don't know if it's the most competitive, maybe. There are ways to deal with it. But yeah, it seems fun. And an excuse to use five Bloodthirsters,
yeah,
basically.
That's, yeah.
The Nurgle, excuse to buy five.
Well, yeah.
The Nurgle ones are really cool as well. So the Munificent Wanderers. Again, this stacks on top of the normal Nurgle wheel. Any melee is minus one rend because they're Nurgle and they stink. Which is pretty cool. If somebody attacks them and hits on an unmodified six, they take a mortal wound.
That's brilliant.
That's really good.
So many people build armies fishing for sixes to hit, and you're just going to punish them. Yeah. Wow, that's a really, really cool spanner in the works army. That.
And this can be put on any Nurgle army.
Wow.
It's only demons that bounce back the mortal wounds, but you could do, you know, big blocks of plague bearers that you want to shift, and your Volkite berserkers.
Yeah.
Trying to do sixes, suddenly get hit with mortal wounds.
Your plague bearers will be doing more damage than normal attacks.
Yeah. Ossiarch Bone Reapers. Yeah.
Gotrek.
Yeah.
People fishing for sixes with Gotrek.
The good thing about Gotrek is he just
ignores them. Just on a free plus, doesn't he?
So yeah, I really like that list, and it's just a minor change that suddenly makes Nurgle suddenly a lot more competitive.
Which is a good thing, really, because Nurgle's an old army now. I'm not sure how competitive Nurgle is, but it's been a couple of years since their book came out.
Yeah, but if you know Daughters of Cain have got lots of six mechanics. If your army keys off getting sixes, you really don't want to be doing that against these plague bearers. They're going to do a load of damage back to you. So yeah, and yeah, we've got them for every faction. It's really, really cool. We do get one based around Bellicor, where if he is within 8 inches of a unit of Bloodletters, Plaguebearers, Demonettes, and Horrors, he can reroll hit and wound rolls.
It's a very situational. You've got to have all four of those units around him.
It's not wholly within, so it is doable, but yeah, there's a bit of mechanics to keeping them close. It does mention Horrors, not Pink Horrors, so you can save some points by taking some Brimstones, but yeah, it's going to be hard to get him in the right aura of all these. He can also pass off wounds to any of those demon units on a 4+ as well.
Oh, that's cool.
So Bellicor's pretty cool. Rerolling everything makes him really cool. I think it's just going to be hard to keep him within range of all
those
units.
He has a cool war scroll in the Slaves to Darkness book anyway, Bellicor does, so it'd be good to see him.
Yeah, he does.
On the table.
One way you can keep those demon units alive, he's got a command ability. At the end of the battle shock phase, on a 3+, he can return D3 slain models to a unit. Now, that is on top of your Chaos Banners bringing back D6 models on a 1 as well.
Yeah.
So, I quite like that. You know, you're not going to have a lot left in your army, Bellicor, and 4 units of big blobs of demons, but they'll keep coming back, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And obviously, you could use that command ability on different units of them as well. Again, not the strongest, maybe, but I'd like to have a go with it.
Yeah.
I think we should. I've got Bellicor built, so I think we should do it.
Well, you've got all flavours of Chaos, Matt. You are a Chaos Lord.
This is true. So yeah, so it's a really nice book. It's not for everyone, admittedly, but I think the lore is well worth picking up, and then some of the supplemental stuff. Even if you don't use it in every game, it's nice stuff to add for a different type of battle.
Yeah.
It's the kind of stuff that we'd normally see in the General's Handbook, really. Kind of the different battle plans and the siege rules and stuff. And I would like to see more of these, maybe set in other realms. Like, I think it's inevitable we're going to see one in Haish following on the storyline with the
I was thinking that when we were talking about the background in there, perhaps the next book will be the Slaanesh arc and, you know, some wars in Haish and Ulgu.
Yeah, I mean, we might even see Azir or something.
Yeah, it takes the focus off of Nagash and Archaon and moves it into more of a focus on either a destruction or an order incarnate god.
Yeah, I think in order of destruction would be a good combo, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's Wrath of the Everchosen. I've done a kind of written review over on the website if you want to check that out. But
I will link it in the podcast notes.
But yeah, highly recommended. I want to see more of it. I think it's a good thing.
And it's a reasonably priced book as well.
It's the same price as Battle Tome.
Yeah. So that's cool.
Yeah, and you're getting like, what, 4 or 5 Battle Tomes worth of content.
That's it. And
from
you know,
a gaming perspective.
Even if it's just new ways to use your models that you've already got, it's fun.
Yeah. Cool. We'll let Matt catch his breath, and we'll be back with our top 3 in a moment. It is time for this week's top 3, where we're going to be looking at our favourite events that we have attended. Now, these could be anything from a great Epic Games Day, down to a store anniversary event, and everything in between, tournaments, the floor's open, basically. So I'm going to start this week with my third choice. Now, I'm going to have to make an admission. I've been meaning for the past 7 days to find out what year this happened, and I kept forgetting to research it. I
only remembered
it wasn't that long ago. Yeah. We weren't bored. My third choice is quite a poignant one, Jay, because I think it was our first games day, and it was the first time we met Matt. We went on the bus from Games Workshop in Crewe.
Yeah.
So I don't think the store had been open all that long.
No. Did we have the banner?
We had a banner, yeah.
Yeah.
Was Ben the store manager at the time?
Ben was, yeah, he's the first store
manager. So this must be, like, what, 10 years ago, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah. It was our first big major Warhammer event.
Yeah.
When we were sort of, you know, we didn't have a ton of amount of Warhammer. Not like we have now. And yeah, we met you for the first time, Matt. So it was a very cool event. It was a very busy event, if I remember right. That was the only problem with the old games days, wasn't it? It was kind of...
There was a lot of people there.
Yeah, you couldn't really see stuff close up.
No.
But I remember seeing...
It did have a good atmosphere to it, though, I remember.
Yeah, it did, yeah. Yeah. Sitting in the arena, sort of eating butties and looking at everybody out.
What I really liked about the community spirit of it was the fact that all the stores came down in coaches and we had the banners.
Yeah.
That's kind of lost now in Warhammer Fest.
Yeah.
Travelling down with the store.
That used to like the... They used to have a lot of tables up, gaming tables. You could just go and have a game because they had all models up. They had the big... Battlefield
dwarf airships fighting and stuff.
Yeah,
Carajons nowadays.
No, it does sound like the new Warhammer Fest at the NEC is going to be a return to the games days of old.
Yeah,
because I think Warhammer Fest was starting to outgrow the Ricoh Arena, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I remember the stores used to bring their own tables with them as well.
Yeah, yeah, it was very much a store community feel about the place, wasn't
it? I felt it was a bit more interactive. I felt there was more to do on those games days. You could go and roll some dice a bit easier than you can at the new games. New games days are more about seeing and talking to the people rather than...
It'd be nice to find that balance between the two, because what I do hope doesn't happen is returning to the NEC, we return to not being able to see all the latest stuff because you cannot get close. And
well, I believe all the previews are happening on the main stage.
Yeah.
So there's arena seats and everyone sees that there, which is really good. Yeah. But then have the more intimate Q&As on more niche stuff that you can get the ticket beforehand on.
Yeah.
But I'm sure, I hope they see more kind of gaming tables.
Yeah.
There were some really good reveals at that game today. I believe the Dark Eldar range was refreshed, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was. Oh,
I stood at those cabinets drooling for ages.
And the Chaos Dwarves, I believe, for Forge World were shown off.
Excellent event. And the birth of Sprues and Brews, but we didn't know it back then.
It was.
Excellent. Jay, your third choice.
I'm going to go for the same as you, Dave. So this was actually my second choice, just the early games days I put down. And some of the highlights were the banners, seeing all the banners, and the mystery boxes. You used to be able to buy the 5
mystery boxes.
I've got packs of blisters at home that are still unopened, sealed still, of Dark Eldar mandrakes, the old mandrakes, like the weird looking ones. But they had the top snipped off, the prices and stuff snipped off. Yeah. So it was just old Stockley wax in a box. You never knew what you were going to get.
Yeah,
they were a bargain. They were like £5 for a box full of stuff.
Yeah, it was good. Got some cracky models there. Black Templar, Empress Champion. Yeah, really cool. And the Cram, trying to get into the Forge World.
Oh, the scrum for the Forge World stand.
Yeah.
There wasn't a queue as such,
charge in.
And let's not forget, it was an old games day that you snuck in to put your Golden Demon entry in.
It was one of the early ones where we went to the wrong entrance and they said, oh no, the main entrance is around that way. Oh, and it was like raining, really bad weather. Oh, I've just come through. So I went through and I was the only one in the hall. So I walked up to the Golden Demon because I think it was a Salamander's Dreadnought I had at the time I was entering. And I had entry number one into Games Day, whatever. Yeah,
and while the rest of your party were outside in the rain waiting to come in the queue.
I remember I tried to be dead sneaky in that one as well because they used to do at these games as days old. They don't do it so much anymore. In fact, I don't know if they do it all anymore. You used to be able to get early access to releases. You could buy some early stuff.
So I believe they stopped it the year the Space Marine Codex came out because the whole thing was leaked online, like, you know, weeks before it was due to come out.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, and I get why they don't do that, because they like to control the flow of information now.
Yeah.
But it was cool being able to get the kit a few weeks early.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
Excellent. Your third choice, Matt?
So my third choice is Throne of Skulls March 2019, where Vorgoth did me all right.
Yeah.
And yeah, a really, really fun event. And yeah, I came third, which was fun, but I had, every game that I had was against someone, you know, really, really fun. Lots of different armies, Empire, there was Sylvaneth, there was Undead, and it was, we'd been to one, I think the previous year, haven't we, Jay? And we're like, oh my god, Throne of Skulls is amazing.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, you couldn't make that one.
No.
I think we've been to quite a few since then. It was just such a fun event, and I was a bit concerned that it wasn't going to be as casual as it was. And there was some, you know, gamey lists there, but due to the way that they do the pairings, they will congregate around the top tables, and then kind of everyone else can have fun with their wacky lists.
Yeah, and I mean, and they don't do very well in the overall results.
This is it,
I mean,
yeah.
In the first Throne of Skulls, so I went to, I had four cracking games against, I'd like to say, like-minded opponents. And then the last game, the guy was great, but he was playing a different game than I was playing. He was playing a really tuned, competitive, min-max, you know, his army was winning proper tournaments. I finished way higher than him in the rankings, even though he obliterated me in like two or three turns.
Which is really, it was really good. The kind of the soft points for that, based on painting and sportsmanship, it just reinforces the kind of like, it's a game to have fun, not to just batter your opponent and make sure they don't have a good game.
I still haven't done a Throne of Skulls on my own yet. Still need to do that.
You should do. You should do. Now the one that last weekend apparently was quite interesting because they mixed things up a little bit, didn't they? You had a hero model who gained stats over the weekend. They had
meeting
engagement battles in there. And it's a shame we couldn't make that one.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think we should keep an eye out for any future ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, Throne of Skulls, 19, it was ace.
Awesome. My second choice is my first Throne of Skulls doubles. My first Throne of Skulls. So I had Legion of the Gash. I paired up with your good self, Matt, and your Temurkin's Horde. And yeah, I mean, it was my first major tournament that I've ever entered, and I was incredibly nervous about doing it, which is one of the great things about doubles, because you'd already done a Throne of Skulls single when Jay went with you, so you kind of already knew what to expect, and that was great. And what made it even better is, straight from the off, our first game was with two incredibly enthusiastic destruction players, and that set the tone for the weekend. Really, the
Tunsgate Tyrants were there to give them a shout out. Yeah. They were great.
Fun. They were so funny, and it was also a victory for us as well, which was great.
It was, yeah.
We also got to meet Rob Symes and play. I mean, I'd never played against Chaos Dwarfs before. Never do
it
I want to play.
It wasn't a very long game.
No,
Dave.
It wasn't very. I'll never want to play Chaos Dwarfs again. But it was a fantastic weekend. It gave me that taste then that I wanted to do more tournaments, as many as I could fit in. So yeah, it was a fantastic weekend, and you're in Warhammer World. So
yeah,
your second choice, Jay.
I need to go before you because I'm also going to say Throne of Skulls. But this was the doubles that we did, myself and Matt, when we took a Dwarden themed doubles army, Fire Slayers and Dispossessed, because there was no Cities of Sigmar at the time.
So it's and beards, Jay. We brought beards
and beards, proper beards, which that was hard work over 2 days. wasn't it?
You weren't very well either.
No.
You were slowly dying over the course of the weekend.
But I was oath-bound to wear that beard. And that, I mean, these Throne of Skulls events, you've said exactly the same as what I would say. They're really good events. If you're into the hobby and you're just there for a good time, they're good to go to. And we met some good people. And we're still in touch with a few of them. The James, he plays Lizardmen, we see him every now and so. It's good.
That weekend, because I was teamed up with Andy Woods of Purple Sparkle Unicorns fame, and my moment of that weekend, I mean, it was a fantastic weekend, but my moment of that weekend was on the Sunday, our first game on the Sunday, me and Andy had had terrible luck that Saturday. We absolutely battered Andy's Stonehorn, don't know what he was thinking, he just didn't get up. But that Sunday morning, we were against, again, two Destruction players, I can't remember the names. But my days, I was hurting from laughing from just what was going on. And finally, Andy Stonehorn decided that he knew what he was doing and did some damage. But that's Throne of Skulls, isn't it? I mean, we were at the bottom. I think we were on the bottom table. And it was so fun. It was just so, so good.
Had faith, though, Dave.
That was the word of the weekend, wasn't it? Andy got faith. Your second choice, Matt?
So my second choice is Warhammer Fest 2018. So this is where Soul Wars was announced, and they had all the awesome new models on show. And I think it was... We'd been to the previous year where they did Silver Town. I think they stepped it up a bit and kind of worked on some of the feedback and had some new things in there. They had some really cool seminars with loads of stuff on. It was a really fun event. We met Peachy.
Had a photo taken. I was trying to find that photo, but it must be in some photo album somewhere. My moment of that event is when we walked into that room, because we missed the AOS seminar.
Yeah.
But we walked into the room, and straight away in one of the cabinets was all the new Nighthorn stuff.
Yeah.
And my jaw dropped. I was like, oh my. And then I saw the Stormcast, and I was like, oh my god.
The sacrosanct, yeah.
These are amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the really good events, and yeah, Warhammer Fest was a bit smaller than the old Games Day, and I think they've improved it each time. There's been a few things that they've fixed the following year, but they've maybe been a slight annoyance the year. Like we mentioned, there was very long lines to get the seminar tickets. We're now this year you get them online before the event, so they're addressing the stuff.
Yeah,
I think the old venue was just getting a bit small for it. Like Jay says, there wasn't quite as much on show as they had at some of the
And it's very spaced out, isn't it, at Coventry?
Yeah. So
multiple floors and things, yeah.
So I'm hoping this year is going to be the best parts of Warhammer Fest mixed with some of the atmosphere of old Games Day.
Yeah.
One thing I do enjoy about the Games Workshop events nowadays, though, is the staff that are there. From the different parts of the studio, the painters, the scenery guys, the lore guys, and they're really, really. I mean, they stand there all day talking to hundreds and hundreds of people, but it's really, really enjoyable talking to them.
The energy they have and the enthusiasm for their job.
Well, you can tell that they love the game as much as we do.
Yeah, because so you probably get the same questions over and over again.
Yeah, that's what I think that as well. But they're always dead happy to talk to you and show you what they're working on. And I remember one, we were talking to Ray, and he was showing us the Storm Vault stuff, and we were there for ages, and he was just showing all different ways you can put it together. Yeah. I mean, he must have done that hundreds of times throughout the course of the day.
I mean, Ray is a legend. He's always the first port of call.
Super fan Ray is. Yeah, he's ace.
So. That's a big draw. That's, you know, if you're umming and ahhing about whether to spend the money, because it is quite expensive, really. I mean, it's a box of models. You know, if you're building an army,
But when else do you get the expensive to chat with, like you say, the designers and the painters, and get some hints and tips?
Exactly.
Yeah. The most expensive part of Warhammer Fest is what you don't spend right there and then. It's what you're going to spend in the next 6 months when you see all the new stuff.
Yeah,
we're around to our top choices. So my top choice is. It happened last year.
Oh,
it was 2 days in Williston near Crewe.
Oh,
and that was the Age of Sigmar Purple Sparkly Unicorns 2 day, where I took these.
You're looking at my notes.
But I took the Stormcast Eternals for 2 days wargaming, and I came away with a prize.
You did, Dave. Representing.
I came home with an award. It was the wooden spoon, but who cares? It was an award. It was five fantastic games. A brilliant weekend. I mean, I love playing with the unicorns anyway, and all the various other people that travel down for the event, including a couple of guys who listen to this very podcast.
Yeah.
So it was great, and it was, you know, it was a wooden spoon, but it was a really fun weekend, and it's very close to home as well, which is a bonus. So, still my only prize. I'm hoping to add to that collection. Maybe another wooden spoon.
It's not so much a trophy cabinet, more a cutlery drawer.
Yeah. It is, yeah. Hopefully one day I'll score some real points. But have I stolen your top choice again, Jay?
That was my top choice. Yes, David. Thank you for that again. Third time running. What my favourite thing about these Purple Sparkle Unicorns events, and I've been to three of them now, I think we've got my fourth one's coming up.
Yeah.
Is... the Purple Sparkle Unicorns themselves. So, I mean, before these events, I only really played with you guys.
Yeah.
But I've been to two of their gaming nights now, and I'm looking forward to the next one. So that'll be a regular thing once a month, going to their game clubs. And it is just so cool meeting even more like-minded people.
Yeah.
And I've probably had about five or six different, you know, friends now in the hobby that... So it's really, really cool. So even if it's just for... networking. You may live in an area where you don't get to play Warhammer. You get to play Warhammer once a month with your brother when he comes home or something like that.
Well, I say it would seem like, oh, there's not many people who are into the hobby, where suddenly actually there's all these people who are into the hobby as well.
Room full of about 30, 40 people all playing different games, and you can just walk over and talk to them, and they'll show you the models and give you painting tips and advice, and
What so, I really like is that a massive range of different abilities. You know, you've got guys there who've won GTs, who've been in like the Masters, to people who have maybe had one game of Warhammer, but they all play the games at the events at the same mindset. Now, some might be a bit more competitive. There might be a bit of competition going on if certain people get matched against each other. Yeah. But it's not. I don't think you'd have a game with somebody to purposely try and just smash you and give you a poor experience. No. Yeah. There's always an element of fun. There'll be a bit of banter in there, but. Yeah. Yeah, they're really, really nice bunch of guys. And if you look on the website, we've put together a calendar of all their upcoming events.
Yeah.
And they've got loads on this year.
Yeah. There's a lot on this year.
Yeah.
Different game systems and things, so.
Yeah. Well, our next one's a 40K one day, which is in mid-March, which we've already mentioned. So, which is only, at the time of recording, one ticket left for, unless that's been snaffled.
They've been super popular. And yeah, if you are in the area, even if you're further afield, there's lots of hotels and stuff nearby.
Yeah, we had a few people last time come down. We did, yeah.
Certainly for the 2 days as well. Yeah. I think they're my favourite ones. One day is fun, but yeah, you can't beat 2 days of
two days. Of
no, that last 2 day Age of Sigmar was brilliant, wasn't it? Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, missed it. Awesome. Do you want to finish us off with your top choice, Matt?
So my top choice is a Games Day, but one back in the mists of time. Back in 2001. So I went to this with my brother, who was into Warhammer at the time, and it was at the National Indoor Arena, where some of the older game stays took place. And I believe you got a limited edition Kroot Shaper you could buy on the day, and you got a goodie bag full of sprues of a brand new army that had just come out for 40k, the Tau. You got a sprue of Kroot and you got some gun drones, I believe.
Ace.
And yeah, we'd not been to a Games Day before, and we were like, wow, this is really, really cool. Going around, speaking to all the designers. Again, it was a bit of a smaller venue compared to the NEC. I remember getting my various codexes signed by like Andy Chambers and Gav Thorpe. I'm like, oh, wow, how cool is this? They had a little area with some Warhammer computer games. Yeah. Which you're like, oh, cool, networked computers. And you know, this is back in 2001, so kind of it was a bit of a special occasion to see that kind of
thing. Yeah.
You know, and again, like we've mentioned for the other events, being able to speak to the designers and look in the Golden Demon cabinets. And yeah, I think that kind of hooked me on that kind of event then. But the best part of that event, which they haven't mentioned in any of the publications or the programme, they just kind of called that there's the surprise announcement. So you all sat down and on a big screen. They played the trailer for the fact that they were announcing the Lord of the Rings miniatures game.
Oh, yes.
You know, stuff leaks now. Back then, it was just like, wow, no one had heard of this. They'd kept it super quiet and they're like, yep, we're doing a Lord of the Rings game. And everyone went mental.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine.
And I'd love to see those kind of announcements again. And they're kind of doing it. They do sometimes get away with dropping something completely, you know, unheard of.
Yeah.
In the age of the internet, you know, stuff like the Sons of Bayonet unfortunately kind of get leaked a bit early.
But Slave Ogryns, they were a surprise.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, wasn't the Mechanicus Flyer, whatever we sold, and no one was thinking that was going to come out. No.
So as much as I like the reveals for, you know, hits on the website, it is nice to get genuinely surprised and, like, blown away by a GW announcement. Yeah. And, yeah, the Lord of the Rings announcement at Game Stage 2001 was definitely one of them.
What a great point to finish on. We aren't quite finished with this podcast because we do have our community top three picks coming up next. As always, you guys haven't let us down with your top three choices. We're going to start over on Instagram. Daz Moore says the AOS Open Days are a blast, as are my local store anniversaries. I attended my first ever Throne of Skulls the weekend just gone, and that was so amazing. Nice one for attending your first one. Probably not going to be your last one.
Yeah, no, Daz, we chatted to him at the Open Day, and he was quite nervous about going to it. I'm like, that'll be fine. And yeah, he obviously loves it.
A Daily One says the Las Vegas Open is amazing, even if you're not a competitive player. It is becoming more of a Warhammer convention than a tournament, seeing all the beautiful armies, different games and communities coming together for several days, and it offers a bit of something for everyone. Love to be able to do an American event.
Yeah, it's a bit of a commute for me.
A bit of a commute, yeah. Over on Facebook, David Metcalf says, my top three are probably quite personal, just to me. His third choice is one of the narrative events at the Spiky Club in Reading. Lots of fun, not too competitive, and it was great to hang out with these guys and mates from Worcester I rarely see. That was, I mean, that local events are just so great, aren't they? just, yeah, they're ace. Second choice, Carnage 2009. This was an independent event ran at Warhammer World. It was my first tournament. I'd only been playing 40k for a few months. I think I finished 2-1-3, which wasn't bad for someone who probably had played less than 5 games before the event. I'd say that's a very good result, that's to be honest. Yeah. And his top choice is Games Day 1995. This was my first one I attended. Got the bus from Games Workshop Middlesbrough at 6 a.m. It was a long day, but so much fun. He does have honourable mentions, which go to the Worcester War events from 13-14, which I won both of, and this year's GT at Warhammer World, as it was my first one.
Nice.
So lots of firsts there.
Cool. Well, Pete Allison says the Horus Heresy weekend of 2017, as it had 40k scale Adeptus Titanicus. That sounds awesome. His first ever Games Day, which was 2000, and the Heavy Metal Painting Masterclass weekend, March 19. Completely changed how I paint and allowed me to up my painting considerably. Plus, I met Matt this weekend. Yeah, it happened at the same time as the Throne of Skulls I went to.
Yeah.
And I'd love to do one of these Heavy Metal weekends. I don't think they're cheap. I think about 120 quid. But you do get a load of paints and stuff, models and brushes. So I think I'd like to do one of these. Obviously, it's having a free weekend to go to it. But I think it'd be really handy to kind of help with your painting skills.
Yeah, take it to the next level.
Yeah. Ray Dranfield says Golden Demon 1994, which was a separate event to Games Day back then. And his first event. He went because he got through the heats that were judged in the local store. Which is pretty cool. Games Day 2001, when Lord of the Rings was announced. Wow. And Warhammer Fest 2019, allowed to show off the Dominion of Sigma for the first time, never talked so much. Ray had like a queue at his desk for the entire event, didn't he? I think that was a standout model of the event.
Yeah.
It was really cool. Kerry Robson says the AOS Throne of Skulls escalation on the weekend just gone. Fantastic atmosphere. I want to go to the next one of these because it sounds really fun. The PSU event a few weeks ago, you know how it was. Yeah, and you can watch him over on Kerry's Twitch channel, The Hobby Room. And any doubles and team tournaments at Warhammer World are always good fun. Now, we've got a team event lined up.
Yeah.
And I can't wait for this.
This is a new one for us because we've not done this one like this before.
No.
Yeah. Heretic Wargaming, so it's Purge the Pit. Mouse Bait, Armies on Parade. Also, the only Warhammer event I've technically attended, so yeah. However, our Horus Heresy group is the best. Hashtag Gigabytes Atlanta Horus Heresy. Lots of fun, lots of narrative and great peeps.
That's
cool.
Really cool.
We have got Ben Johnson says his top three tournaments. ETC 2008, first time playing Warhammer Abroad. The South Coast GT 2012. Sunshine and making up for being sick in 2011. And Hammer and Bolter 2020 this last weekend. Over in Belgium, I believe that was.
Belgium,
it was a really
nice.
Good event. Terradan, Blood and Glory 2019, the last flight of Terradan. Won all of his games, but only played 4. So something must have happened at the start of one of those ones. Facehammer GT 16, the first Facehammer GT, an absolute blast. Some great games, good friends, and an amazing venue. And Firestorm 4s 2015, my first AOS event. Came last, but won best boards. Doug says any Throne of Skulls event at Warhammer World is the epitome of hobby in my eyes. I love Throne of Skulls. And Ollie Grimwood, Realms at War, the premier narrative event. Rise of Empires, Border Wars, an event where 20 or so tables were dressed with themed terrain to form a city with city walls, docks and sewers. And Fate of Sigma, a narrative event where the players' forces were dictated by a games master.
Ooh.
That sounds really cool.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, some really, really great shout-outs this week.
Mm. Very, very awesome. Speaking of top threes, Matt, what is next week's top three?
Well, as we are recording this, it is Valentine's Day. So we've gone with a Valentine's kind of theme for this. So I want to know the top three ways to win the heart of a Warhammer fan.
There you go. That's an interesting one. Quite a creative one, I think.
It is a different one, yeah.
On next week's podcast, it'll be quite a bumper episode, actually, because we'll be looking at the new Adeptus Titanicus expansion.
Shadow and Iron.
Shadow and Iron, I couldn't remember the name of it. And we'll also be taking a look into The Greater Good, the latest Psychic Awakening book for Warhammer 40k. So that should be pretty exciting.
And no doubt there'll be another week full of lots of releases that I really want to buy.
Definitely, definitely. So that's a lot to look forward to. So have a great week of wargaming, and we'll be back again next week. Bye.
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 Thank you for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. If you like what you've been listening to, please do give us a share and a comment if you're listening via Apple Podcasts. For further content, please check out spruesandbrews.com, and you can contact us on Twitter @spruesandbrews or over on Facebook, facebook.com/spruesandbrews.